From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank talked with Robert Spencer, the director of Jihad Watch and the author of 17 books, including the New York Times bestseller, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades. Here now is Hank Hanegraaff.
And welcome to another edition of Hank Unplugged, the show that brings you some of the most important, incisive individuals on the planet today. And today's Hank Unplugged is no exception. I have the opportunity to talk to Robert Spencer. And quite frankly, he's someone that I think of in heroic terms. And we'll talk about that as we go through the broadcast today. Robert, I am really, really excited to have you on this broadcast.
Well, I am so happy to be here, Hank, and thank you very much.
You're the director of Jihad Watch. Tell me a little bit about that.
Jihad Watch is dedicated to exposing and explaining the motivating ideology behind jihad terror. It's something that has been obscured to a tremendous degree by the mainstream media and even by the U.S. government. And so at Jihad Watch, we have a news and commentary website, which is at jihadwatch.org, that gives you daily updates on jihad activity in the U.S. and around the world, and also explains with commentary why these things are happening, what the justification for terrorist acts is within Islamic teaching, and why Muslims continue to behave in this way despite the condemnations by Muslim leaders of terror activity.
You know, one of the things that I oftentimes point out with respect to Islam is you've essentially have three or four options. You can say the Shahada, you can become a dhimmi, you can succumb to the sword, and now Islam is growing through what I call squattering. In other words, migration without assimilation, the python swallowing its prey with a long and slow digestion. So the work that you're involved in is not peripheral work. I mean, this is really central to what's going on in the world today.
Well, I would think so, certainly. I mean, there is a concerted effort in this immigration without assimilation to which you refer to overwhelm the West demographically. As a matter of fact, just moments before we started this show, I was watching a video of Muslim refugees, so-called, in Germany, noting that Germans were only having a few children, two at most, whereas Muslims in Germany were having six or seven, and with four wives, that was 20-some children per person. And these young men who were saying this to a German journalist were quite forthright in saying that Allah has granted them the conquest of Germany, not by means of armies, but simple demographics.
Yeah, a country or a civilization that becomes Islamic demographically will inevitably become Islamic politically as well.
Yes, and this is because Islam has an intrinsic political component that Western authorities remain steadfast in ignoring and denying the existence of, but nonetheless it does exist. And with the growing numbers of Muslims in the West, you're inevitably going to have an increase in the calls for the implementation of various aspects of the Islamic political program. And the West has already made numerous concessions on that score. For example, it's just taken for granted nowadays in the mainstream media that you do not criticize Islam. You don't say anything critical about Muhammad or the Quran or Allah. If you do, you're a racist, bigoted Islamophobe. No such criticism is allowed in the public square. And that is a provision of Islamic law, that criticism of Allah and the Quran and Islam in general are banned. And so the West is already beginning to accept the idea that Sharia principles have to be implemented in the West, without even realizing that that's what's happening. And so once you open the door to that, it just keeps going. And it will keep going unless there is resistance at some point until Sharia is fully implemented.
You're the author of almost 20 books on Islam. And when I was writing my book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, I read every one of your books. And as I was reading through your books, I was thinking about the fact that not only are you very witty in writing. I mean that as a compliment. I mean,
Thank you very much.
Titles are just absolutely, everybody must get stoned, by the way. I love that.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, but to do what you have done is a labor of love. I mean, it's a labor of love for Western civilization. I know what it takes to write a book, and what you have done for Western civilization, the good is incalculable.
All my work has been with the underlying goal of trying to defend and preserve Western civilization and Judeo-Christian principles and the understandings of human rights that we have in the West that are generally accepted around the world, with the notable exception of Islamic countries. And so, that is in particular the ones that are under Islamic law. And so it's kind of ironic that people think that what I've been doing all these years is negative, whereas in my view, it's completely positive and is designed to try to show people that there is a vastly better way of life offered in the traditions of the West than in Islamic ones.
Although I'd have to say that there is a lot of hate speech in your books. In fact, it all comes from the quotations. You're quoting hate speech that comes right out of Islam.
Yeah, exactly. The irony is that for years now, I've pointed out the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which is the 57 Muslim governments, the massive organization that is the largest voting bloc at the United Nations, and an international organization that for years is trying to compel the West to accept Islamic blasphemy laws and to criminalize criticism of Islam, that they have never said a word when Muslims say, kill them wherever you find them, or the Jews are our worst enemies, or all these things that are in the Quran. But when I quote the Muslim clerics saying these things, then they put that in their Islamophobia list, and it suddenly becomes hate speech when I quote them. But you're absolutely right, Hank. The real hate speech here is coming from the Quran and from Islamic tradition, and not from those of us who are trying to call attention to the reality of these things.
You wrote The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, and I want to focus for a moment on what you have been able to communicate to Western civilization with respect to the Crusades. Oftentimes when you get in a discussion about jihad, the first thing that comes up is, well, this is precisely how Christianity advanced as well. And then you hear about all of the atrocities that occurred in the Crusades. There's a perspective that we ought to know about this, and that perspective is that the Crusades were largely a defensive action against an almost impotent Eastern Church that was being absolutely bludgeoned by the Islamic hordes.
Yeah, that's right. There were 450 years of jihad attacks that had overwhelmed what were largely Christian lands before that. The holdings of the Byzantine Empire, the Eastern Roman Empire, which was a Christian entity, and that included all of North Africa and the Middle East, what's considered nowadays to be the heart of the Islamic world. And starting in the 7th century, these lands were conquered and Islamized. In the year 1071 at Manzikert in Asia Minor, what is now Turkey, the Byzantines suffered a tremendous defeat at the hands of the Ottoman armies, and essentially all of Asia Minor was lost, and the Byzantine emperor, Alexius Comnenus, in great alarm, appealed to the Pope and the kings of the West for help, and the Crusades were a response to that. So in the first place, they were a much delayed reaction because these conquests began in the 7th century, but it wasn't until 1099 that the Western armies arrived in the Holy Land. And they were a small-scale reaction because all of North Africa and the Middle East had been lost to Christendom, but only the Holy Land was the target of any kind of resistance and any kind of pushback in the Crusades. And finally, they were ultimately something that was defensive, because most of the time nowadays you hear about the Crusades as if they were a completely gratuitous attack by the Western armies, proto-colonialist armies, on Muslims who were just minding their own business in their indigenous homelands, when actually they were a response to these conquests and an attempt to protect the Holy Land for Christian pilgrims who were being widely attacked and enslaved and in other ways harassed in the Holy Land at that time. And to try to reverse a trend that had led to the destruction of thousands, literally thousands of churches in the Holy Land in the 100 years before the Crusaders arrived. Now, this is not to say that everything they did was good and or to justify all of their actions, but there is no doubt that the Crusades, in their conception, in the vision that they had originally of simply trying to reclaim some of this land and protect people, there was nothing wrong with this. And the idea that's been put forward by people such as Bill Clinton and others after 9/11, that the suspicion between the West and the Islamic world began because of the Crusades and was caused by the Crusades, is ahistorical and fantastic. It meshes with the politically correct rewriting of history that is so common today, but when you actually look at the actual history, you don't see it borne out at all.
You know, I want to get back to maybe something about you as a person. I mean, what would motivate you early on in your career to say, this is what I'm going to devote my legacy to warning the West about the threat of Islam? And I think we also have to make the clarification that you are not someone that dislikes Muslims. Muslims are people. Your problem is with a religion that enslaves. But you have a body of work that is probably unprecedented when it comes to Islam. Talk about how you got into this.
Well, you know, Hank, I appreciate in the first place the distinction, because it's a conflation really that's made by Islamic groups and leftist groups in the United States, that if you speak about how Islamic jihadis use the teachings of Islam to justify violence and hatred, then you're the problem. You're a racist and a bigot and you hate all Muslims. And of course, this has always been a calumny and always been a falsehood, but that has not prevented it from being often repeated. In any case, I got into this because of my family background, and that just sparked an interest within me when I was very young. My grandparents were actually from the Ottoman Empire, the last caliphate, unless you count the Islamic State or ISIS. And the last caliphate is, of course, the precursor of modern Turkey, and it fell. It was abolished by the founder of modern Turkey, Mustafa Kemal Ataturk, in 1924. Before that, though, there had been a considerable period of time when the Orthodox Christians of that area were being persecuted by the Muslims because of the loss of the Greek province in Europe, what is now Greece, the independent country of Greece. It was an Ottoman province for several hundred years after the conquest of Constantinople in 1453. And then in 1821, the Greeks declared their independence and were able to sustain it and make it good. Now, there was at that time the concept of enosis, the idea that all the Greeks should be in one polity, in one political nation, one political entity. And so there was a push on the part of Greeks in Europe, as well as Greeks in Turkey, who'd been there from time immemorial, since the time of, you know, Helen of Troy and all that. There was a push on the part of the Greeks in Constantinople and all of Western Asia Minor, which is where my family is from, to be united with the Greeks in an independent Greek state, be united with the Greeks of Europe. And of course, the Ottoman Turks did not take kindly to this and considered them to be Kufar Harbi, which is infidels at war with Islam. And so many were massacred, many were enslaved, and many were killed, many were forcibly converted to Islam. And so my family was from Tsesmes near Smyrna, what is now Izmir, and Chesme. And Tsesmes is a very nice town on the coast of the Adriatic and right across from Chios. And they were exiled from there in 1918, my grandparents, because they declined the invitation to convert to Islam and be able to remain there as Muslims. And so they got out, and my great-grandfather was killed, but my grandparents were able to get out and ultimately made their way to the United States, to New York City. And so when I was growing up, I was very young, I would listen, ask them about it, and they would tell me some stories. My grandmother in particular told me some stories about how wonderful it was over there, and how she used to hear the call of the muezzin in the minaret, and how beautiful it was, which is of course something that Barack Obama said much later to the New York Times, that the call to prayer for the Muslims from the minaret was the most beautiful sound on earth.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Robert Spencer. Former President Obama quoted from the Quran, "Whoever kills an innocent, it is as if he has killed all mankind. And whoever saves a person, it is as if he has saved all mankind." Now that sounds compassionate and peaceful, but Obama simply ignored the very next verse, which mandates punishment for anyone who Muslims do not regard as innocent. Find out how Islam and the Quran are being whitewashed by political leaders and pundits in Hank Hanegraaff's new book, Muslim: What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. Receive your copy as our thanks for your gift simply by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. So rapid and pandemic has been the decline of biblical literacy and spiritual discernment that our once unimaginable post-truth culture is effectively becoming an anti-truth culture. While the sun is setting on the Western Church, Islam is now the fastest growing religion in the world. This means that it's not simply enough to be aware of this threat. Christians need to wake up, stand up, and speak up. This means being able to counter the outright lies about Islam that otherwise will go unchecked with horrendous consequences. And that's what Hank Hanegraaff's book, Muslim: What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, will enable you to do. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. On this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, we're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, in which Hank talked with Robert Spencer, the director of Jihad Watch. For all the debate over Islam and its growing presence in the world, one thing is often overlooked. Islam is not a religion in the sanitized Western sense. It is, in contrast, an all-encompassing socio-political legal matrix that has bred a worldview antagonistic to anything but itself. While there may be millions of peaceful and tolerant Muslims, many of them are neighbors. Islam itself is hardly peaceful and tolerant. Read Hank Hanegraaff's new book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Let's rejoin Hank and Robert Spencer in their conversation.
My grandmother in particular told me some stories about how wonderful it was over there and how she used to hear the call of the muezzin in the minaret and how beautiful it was, which is, of course, something that Barack Obama said much later to the New York Times, that the call to prayer for the Muslims from the minaret was the most beautiful sound on earth. And in any case, they told me all these wonderful stories about how great it was, which only led to my question, well, then why are you here? Why aren't you still there? Well, we were exiled. And why were you exiled? And then they couldn't tell me or wouldn't tell me, so I wanted to know and started to study these things and read the Quran, read Islamic literature, because the history of the area, the more I was able to piece together about it, led straight to Islam. And then the reading of these Islamic texts didn't make me want to convert to Islam, but it did make me fascinated, so I kept reading and studying. And you know how one thing leads to another. I never expected to be doing this, but it seemed to me to be necessary to do, particularly after 9/11. I was consulting with some people privately about Islam in the 90s, but after 9/11, I was asked by one of them to give an explanation of what was happening, since no explanation that was truthful seemed to be forthcoming at that time in the establishment media.
In concert with what you're just talking about, is very, very fascinating. All our histories are, to some degree, how the Lord leads us to do what ultimately we find to be our calling. But you've now written a book called The Complete Infidel's Guide to Free Speech and Its Enemies. And I think it's interesting for people to know why this is commensurate with your studies on Islam. Free speech is no longer free.
Yes, that's right. There's a concerted effort to shut down any honest discussion about these issues. And this comes from the group I mentioned before, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. Ultimately, it's been lobbying at the UN for years to compel the West to criminalize what it calls incitement to religious hatred. I explain all this in the book. Incitement to religious hatred, of course, is a very subjective kind of category, a term that really could be applied in any number of directions and in any number of ways. But coming from the OIC, it means criticism of Islam, essentially. Nobody really cares when people criticize Christianity or Judaism or any other religion, but they certainly get upset when people criticize Islam, or Muslims do in any case, and the OIC chief among them. So they've been trying to compel the West to shut down any such criticism, and they've met with a great deal of success in this. When Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State a few years back, she actually signed on to a OIC-sponsored resolution at the United Nations calling upon member states to criminalize incitement to religious hatred. Then she went to the OIC's annual meeting in Istanbul in December of 2012 and explained to them that the United States had the First Amendment, and the First Amendment prevented outlawing the criticism of Islam outright. So what she intended to do, and what she would get her allies and friends to do, was to use what she called old-fashioned techniques of peer pressure and shaming to get people to not say what we don't want them to say. And that's really how this has proceeded ever since. Nowadays, it's sort of taken for granted. You just don't criticize Islam. If you do, you will be subject to peer pressure and shaming. And that is what we see all the time. The atheist writer Richard Dawkins recently was scheduled to speak in Berkeley, California. And he was brought there by a radio station that was politically on the left and very happy to have him because of his criticism of Christianity. But then they canceled him. And the reason why they canceled him was extraordinary. They said that they had discovered that he criticized Islam as well as Christianity. And that was just beyond the pale. It was not acceptable, so they were canceling it. And these leftists, the secular atheists as they are, they take it for granted that you just don't criticize Islam. Many, many other people also in the U.S., they've internalized this idea that you just don't say anything negative about Islam in accord with, as I explained before, the Sharia blasphemy laws. This has gotten so bad that you remember, I think a couple years back, there were 15 people killed at a Christmas party in San Bernardino, California, and they were killed by a couple of Muslims. The neighbors of the Muslims explained later that they had seen all sorts of suspicious activity at these people's house all the summer before the attack, but they never went to police because they were afraid of being called racist. And this is the number that's been done on us, that now that freedom of speech is no longer something that people take for granted. It's something that is essentially null and void when it comes to criticism of Islam, unless you're willing to have your reputation savaged as being a racist, a bigot, a fascist, a neo-Nazi, just for pointing out that the Quran teaches violence and hatred.
You know what's interesting is this is coming from illiberal liberalism. I want to read you something that I was reading earlier on in the day from a book by Dr. Benjamin Weicker, where he says that the contemporary Islamic takeover of Europe is due in great part to the dominance of secularism, which simultaneously declares Christianity to be the worst of all religions and welcomes Muslims as the best of all neighbors, even though everything about Islam is diametrically opposed to secular liberalism. As a result, one barely hears a peep from the secular left at the massive extermination of Christians now, but much to the horror of the Christian crusades against the allegedly innocent Muslims way back when. The view of European secularists has always been that anything is better than the Judeo-Christian tradition, especially Islam. And then Weicker says, now you know why the left today seems to love Islam and despise Christianity, even at the cost of its own destruction. The reason I read that to you is when I was reading that this morning, I was thinking about how odd it is that you have illiberal liberals in bed with organizations like CARE.
Well, you know, that's, of course, absolutely on the money, absolutely true what you read. And I think that the partnership comes from a shared hatred of the West, of Christianity, of everything that makes the West what it is, and in particular of the United States. And so you have you have the leftists seeing Muslims, and they certainly are not in favor of the left's moral libertinism, but they are, they both hate the United States. They both hate Christianity, they both hate the West, and so I think the left is playing the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of game, and that's what we see here.
And it's a dangerous game to play. Coming in November 2017, Confessions of an Islamophobe. Now, you do a lot of the titles, a lot of the writing, you know, the ostrich with its head in the sand, a lot of that tongue-in-cheek. What's going on with this title?
Well, you know, there's a book, I can't even say the title, but there's a book by the comedian Dick Gregory, who just died not too long ago, and he was a black comedian, and he titled his book an epithet, a racial epithet that everybody knows that nobody dares to say except rappers. And he told his mother that now every time she heard the word, she would just think people were talking about his book. And I titled this book in much the same spirit that I've for years been denying that I'm an Islamophobe in the sense that I have some irrational hatred for Islam or Muslims, which is the way that it's ordinarily used. But in the book, I explain that there are actually quite legitimate reasons for being suspicious about Islam and concerned about massive Muslim migration into the West, in that this is something that women, that Jews and Christians and even secular liberals, they all ought to be concerned about, because this is going to impinge upon them. And so there, in the book, I make a distinction between the what I call the good Islamophobia and the bad Islamophobia, because actually, by the term Islamophobia, which is of course a new invention, Muslims and leftists actually lump together two things that do not go together at all. And one is vigilante attacks on innocent people, and those are never justified in any context. And the other is honest analysis of the ways in which jihadis use the teachings of Islam to justify violence and to make recruits among peaceful Muslims. And that is something that, even though it is condemned as Islamophobia by the establishment media and by many others, it's still something that is worth exploring and necessary to explore if we're going to understand what is going on around the world, why these things are happening, why there is Islamic jihad all around the world. We can't understand that without looking into the motivating ideology behind jihad terror.
I've just kind of scratched the surface on some of your writings, all of your books available at equip.org. For anyone who supports the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute, happy to send a copy of any one of Robert Spencer's books out to you is my way of saying thank you. I really believe in Robert Spencer, in his writings, and in the contribution that he's making to Western civilization, not the least of which is leading seminars on Islam and jihad for the FBI, the U.S. Central Command, United States Army Command, the Joint Terrorism Task Force. You're a consultant with the Center for Security Policy. You have done so much work with the American government, and you think about where we are today. I think we're in a mess, but maybe you can give us some kind of a perspective. Are things getting better from the perspective of people in positions of leadership and power, recognizing the demographics threat, understanding the threat of global Islamic jihadism and so forth?
Well, you know, when you mentioned that I have done all these things with the U.S. government, that is absolutely true, but it's a little bit old. In 2011, the Obama administration received a letter from Muslim Advocates, which is a Muslim legal association, and it was co-signed by 57 Muslim and allied organizations. And it demanded that I be fired from training the FBI and military groups. I used to go in and just introduce them to Islam, essentially. We'll go through the Quran and the life of Muhammad in a day to try to give them an idea of what the mindset of the people they were dealing with was. And that all ended then in 2011. With this letter, the Obama administration immediately complied, and not only complied, but scrubbed the counterterror training of the FBI and the military, Homeland Security, the CIA, all of them, of any mention of Islam and jihad in connection with terrorism. So since 2011, if you were to join the FBI today and you want to go into counterterror, you're going to hear about right-wing extremists and militiamen and so on, but you're not going to hear a thing about Islamic jihadis and not learn anything about the motivating ideology behind them.
We'll pick up Hank's conversation with Robert Spencer in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and CRI's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI in the battle for life and truth and receive your copy of Hank's new book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back right after the break with more of the Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Robert Spencer on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. The history of Islam is one of wanton carnage and horrific oppression, and it has been whitewashed beyond recognition by our politically correct elites. According to credible sources, 120 million Africans, 80 million Hindus, 60 million Christians, 10 million Buddhists have been slaughtered in the name of Islam. And that doesn't include the millions of Muslims killed by other Muslims. Islam is the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel. Read Hank Hanegraaff's stunning book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. Receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. Welcome back to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Islam is the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel. Read the new book by Hank Hanegraaff, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Well, let's now rejoin Hank's conversation with Islam research specialist Robert Spencer.
Since 2011, if you were to join the FBI today and you want to go into counterterror, you're going to hear about right-wing extremists and militiamen and so on, but you're not going to hear a thing about Islamic jihadis and not learn anything about the motivating ideology behind them. Now, with Trump came in saying that he was going to change all this, or implying, I should say, that he was going to change all this, because really he said that he was going to speak about Islamic terrorism, and he said that he rebuked Obama and Hillary Clinton for refusing to speak about Islamic terrorism, and that was all very well. But since then, he's surrounded himself with people like National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, who have declined to say Islamic terrorism and have actually signed on to and endorsed and spread themselves the Obama view that Islamic terrorism has nothing to do with Islam, and that we cannot speak about the motivating ideology behind jihad terror because that will only get our Muslim allies angry. And so, that being the case, I really don't know how this is going to work out with the Trump administration at this point. It's certainly something that is, it doesn't look good right now. And we can only hope that ultimately the president will remember that he had promised to bring more reality in our analysis of the jihad threat, and can hope, therefore, that there will be a change. But right now, it doesn't look so great.
Yeah, so you're talking, actually, I think, about CIA Director John Brennan, right? He's the one that demanded that...
Yeah, he's no longer the head of the CIA, but he was Obama's, yeah.
Right, and he was demanding that you be removed, but also scrubbing all mention of Islam and jihad. I mean, that was part of the process as well.
Yes, that's right. It wasn't Brennan doing the demanding. They were demanding it of him, that I be dismissed and that all mention of Islam and jihad be removed from counterterror training. And that was done. And so since then, of course, there has been nothing. If you look at the Obama administration's program on how to deal with the jihad threat, you have Countering Violent Extremism is the name of it. And there's no mention of Islam or jihad. And the Islamic groups to which the Obama administration considered itself beholden were very strict about this. And even when there was a countering violent extremism program that clearly had something to do with trying to stop Islamic jihadis, the Council on American Islamic Relations and others protested, and it was immediately scrubbed.
I want you to give some kind of an idea of where we are in Western civilization, because I've also read that you have been banned by the British government from entering the United Kingdom because you pointed out accurately that Islam has doctrines of violence against unbelievers. I mean, if you think about that, where are we going to go as a civilization, when you have someone like yourself that knows more about this subject than probably anybody on the planet being banned by a government? I mean, it's mind-blowing.
It's an extraordinary thing, and it comes from the British government that's doing everything it can to appease Islamic jihadis, hoping that I guess maybe they'll go lightly with Britain, so that we have numerous jihad preachers who have been admitted into Britain. As a matter of fact, I just put up a list today at Jihad Watch because they banned one, which is very unusual. There was a Muslim cleric who was set to actually address the British Parliament, but he has in the past called openly for the destruction of Britain. And yet he was going to be admitted to Britain and brought to speak at the Parliament. And this was an extraordinary situation. It got quite a lot of publicity. And just today, the UK government banned him from entering the country. And I noted at Jihad Watch that that's all very well, but there are plenty of other jihad preachers who have been admitted into Britain by the British government. And yet, three Iraqi bishops, not just me, but three Iraqi bishops from areas where Christians were persecuted and driven out of the homelands that they had inhabited since the time of Christ himself, they were also recently banned from entering Britain. And so really, Britain has gone mad. You know, you can't really sugarcoat it. It's just astonishing what's happened. They have been hounding and persecuting people who are trying to call attention to the jihad threat and allowing in those who actively preach jihad.
Where is all of this going from your perspective? I mean, we see the terrorist attacks, they're like the waves, but there's a riptide underneath the surface, and I think it's demographic to a large degree. But where do you think all of this is going to go?
There's going to be large-scale civil strife in the West unless there is a massive reversal of immigration policies and a massive reevaluation of policies that have allowed Islamic groups to set up all over Europe essential enclaves that are essential enclaves, what are essentially enclaves, I should say, that are allowing Islamic law to be implemented at the expense of the law of the land.
Kind of interesting as you talk about the fact that it's old news that you were doing training for the U.S. government and various agencies and so forth. But I suppose in some ways it may be old news in terms of getting invitations to speak at a lot of the universities that you've spoken at in the past.
Well, yeah, actually, I went quite a few years without getting any invitations to universities. In 2007, I spoke it quite a lot, and then a few years passed. But it's interesting to note that the Young Americas Foundation, which is a wonderful group, a student group of national extent, they have been trying to instill a little more courage in the students on campuses, conservative students on campuses. And this is all to the good, because for years they have been really too frightened to bring in conservative speakers on many campuses. And this is entirely understandable because, you know, while I appreciate being able to speak on campuses, I know that the students have it much worse than I do. I get to leave town, whatever town it is, but they don't. They have to stay there for 4 years. And if they bring in somebody like me, they often will be abused and sometimes even physically menaced for quite some time thereafter, and certainly ostracized, vilified, smeared, demonized, and so on. But because of YAF, I did speak at three campuses this past spring. One of them, I used the term speak quite loosely because I really didn't get to say much. I just stood there and got screamed at for an hour and a half by fascists who style themselves to be anti-fascists. Colleges in general, even the other two where I did speak, they were extraordinarily inhospitable. It was as if Jack the Ripper was coming to campus. And you know, Hank, if I had been a Guantanamo inmate who went onto campus and started screaming death to America, I would have been celebrated as a hero on any of those campuses. But if you come in and say there is a problem with Islamic Jihad and free societies are at risk, then you're a tremendous villain on college campuses today.
What kind of a reception do you get on national television and radio shows today?
Well, you know, I was recently on Tucker Carlson's Fox show and Fox and Friends, and also Varney on Fox Business. And I commend them all for being interested in dealing with the issue, because actually the reason why I was on was I was sort of part of a news story because PayPal, the online payment site, they banned Jihad Watch from receiving donations because we were so classified as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center only classifies as hate groups that dissent from its far-left agenda, and they have made a business of demonizing legitimate groups on the right by lumping them in with real hate groups like the KKK and neo-Nazis. And recently they refused to classify Antifa, the violent group of leftist thugs, as a hate group. So their hate group list is highly politically biased and essentially worthless. Nonetheless, it was taken up by PayPal after a hit piece ran in a leftist publication that was asking PayPal why they would allow a hateful fellow like me to use their services, and they dropped me. And there was an outcry, and I was on these Fox shows, and PayPal actually reversed itself, which is refreshing. But it indicates that these groups, although they are enthralled to the left to a tremendous degree, they are still susceptible to public pressure, and that we need to become more active and to work to bring that pressure wherever we can in the service of justice. In any case, it was fun. It was good to be on Fox, and I appreciate all three of those shows for allowing this to be discussed, because, of course, the implications are far beyond me personally. I may be a terrible fellow in every way, but if PayPal and other online platforms are going to start refusing their service to groups because they don't like their politics, then really everyone is at risk, and free society is itself at risk, because once you do that, any group that gains power can do the same thing to groups that are not in power. And it's really the road to tyranny rather than the free society that we have enjoyed up to now.
I can't help but hear the echo of Christ's words, "Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you on account of me. Rejoice and be glad, for great is your reward in heaven." I think that applies to you. You've pointed out that we must speak the truth in love, but our obligation to be charitable must never overwhelm our responsibility to bear witness to the truth. In other words, we cannot shy away from that.
Well, this is very important, Hank. I think a lot of Christians have the idea that charity equals niceness. And that, for example, there's so many efforts at Muslim-Christian dialogue where the Christian party into the dialogue doesn't dare bring up any unpleasant facts or issues of Christian persecution because they don't want to offend the Muslims in the dialogue. And, you know, I don't think that's charity. I don't think it's either charity or productive in the slightest degree to ignore or gloss over or deny unpleasant realities. If you're going to have a dialogue, you ought to dialogue about those difficult things if you really want to stop them, if you want to make any headway against the persecution of Christians. But for example, a few years ago, I was invited to speak to a Catholic organization, and then the local bishop, Robert McManus of Worcester, Massachusetts, actually canceled me and explained that he was canceling me because I would be speaking about Muslim persecution of Christians, and that could harm the wonderful dialogue they were having with Muslims in the Boston area. I thought about that when the Boston Marathon bombings happened, because those young men who carried out the Boston Marathon bombings, they were members of the Islamic Society of Boston that McManus was in dialogue with, and apparently the dialogue didn't help enough to prevent those bombings. And more than that, of course, you have the problem of the fact that if you're going to avoid speaking about the Muslim persecution of Christians, then how is the dialogue helping anything?
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. To listen to this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Robert Spencer in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. If you'd like to stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute in the battle for life and truth, and receive as our thanks for your gift Hank's new book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, or any of the other resources mentioned on the broadcast today, call our resource consultants now at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to us at CRI P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org.
So rapid and pandemic has been the decline of biblical literacy and spiritual discernment that our once unimaginable post-truth culture is effectively becoming an anti-truth culture. While the sun is setting on the Western Church, Islam is now the fastest growing religion in the world. This means that it's not simply enough to be aware of this threat. Christians need to wake up, stand up, and speak up. This means being able to counter the outright lies about Islam that otherwise will go unchecked with horrendous consequences. And that's what Hank Hanegraaff's book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, will enable you to do. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI. Make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org.